Hello and welcome to another episode of Those Conspiracy Guys. My name is Gordo and this time we're talking about some true crime stories. This episode is all about Natalie Holloway, the disappearance of Natalie Holloway in Aruba. Still haven't found her. Her and Madeleine McCann are having a big party someplace. But joining that disapproving, you heard, is a love of my life, effervescent force in my existence. My companion on the trip to the USA, TCG TV, that's happening fairly
PG.
Cross fingers. She's been on the show before. You've heard her on the Fritzl episode. You will have heard her on the Jimmy Savile episode. She's getting all the airtime these days. Ladies and gentlemen, Claire Fox.
Hi, guys. I'm looking forward to discussing where's Bobby Fischer, where's Madeleine McCann. And where is Natalie Holloway?
They're all having a big mad party someplace.
Or they're not.
Yeah, or they're like buried more in an unmarked grave. Yeah. But this is a real weird case. We did this one on Spin FM, True Crime, back in the day. I think it was like this time last year even. And we're getting around to it now. There have been some revelations in the case this summer and at the start of this year. And we're throwing these in. A couple of new documentaries been made. And it's not really that... Like, Natalie Holloway is not really an easy to look up case, you know?
No, there's not a lot of information about it. And any information that is there is just head-scratchingly sparse and also inexplicable.
A lot of spurious, like, assumptions and, you know, circumstantial evidence that are weaved together into some weird, like, Disney-voiced excuse for a TV show. There's one documentary that, like, for 2020 or something like that. It's like, Natalie's body was, like, horrifically mutilated. Like, it's too happy, like, you know.
He sounds like, not so much Disney to me, it's like he wished he was presenting Wheel of Fortune or something. But he didn't get that gig, so he was determined that no matter what gig he got, he was going to use his well-practiced voice, well-rehearsed voice, which was like, and nobody knows if she is dead.
Yeah, it seemed very like the whole Natalie Holloway documentary was like an audition for his next role, maybe,
which was like, you know, something very bright and happy, like maybe the elf in Elf.
I don't know, but I found that it was so weird that there was nothing online. There was like one super grainy documentary on YouTube about like the actual facts of the case, and then there was like this new look what happened this summer, and it was a thing from the start of the year, like, for something that was so high profile. And I talk about my speculations later on as to why it was hush-hushed,
but as like, will I.
An 18-year-old girl from Alabama goes on holiday to Aruba with her mates. And then she fucking,
like, spring break kind of
spring
situation.
Break. Woo, titties.
Even though it wasn't spring, but like,
yeah. She's just like, hey, come on, we go to Aruba. It's like a Dutch colony. It's an island in the Caribbean. And it's, you know, it's a...
And a lot of people go there.
Loads of people go there. Mm. And there's loads of like white Americans that have businesses all set up there. It's all very welcoming. And it's all, you know, it's multicultural. They have like, as we talk about later on, the Calpo brothers, like they're half Mauritian and half Aruban. And it's like... What's the, you know, where's the limit to what you can do? These American girls are going over there, like they're going to, I don't know, Cancun and stuff in other countries and just be like, spring break, here, show me, here's these fresh, fresh tits.
It's legal to drink here.
Yeah, it's, you know, and these girls went over, got fucking smashed, and then Natalie Holloway, like, disappeared.
Yeah.
And it was laid at the feet, the guilt was laid at the feet of a guy called Joran Vandersloot. Which you'll hear.
also, some of the guilt was laid at her own missing feet.
We'll talk about it. Not that her feet were, her whole body is missing.
But her feet as an extension of that body. Or it's as a part of that body.
It's very fucking, it's very strange, like this case. And how it all plays out, there's so much speculation, there's so much, like, it's very similar to the, I think, like a grown-up version of the Madeleine McCann thing, where a lot of facts are known, but no discernible truths can be piece together from those facts.
Yeah, and
they know, like, between this time and this time, and between, you know, who was where and when. But, you know,
but also there's elements of, like, you know, we're led to believe it's a Keystone Cop situation.
Yeah,
but I would be skeptical about that.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of these things, like they blame the Portuguese police in Madeleine McCann's case. Like these guys, you can see them on some of the TV shows or some of the documentaries, and it's, you know, they're wearing like a Fruit of the Loom collared T-shirt with police written on the front of it in like a Sharpie. Like these kind of police guys, they're not really like the crack FBI squad that you need to find these people. But the FBI still got involved. Like,
yeah,
it was the international investigations. Like, it got serious and it led to a crazy conclusion, which we'll come to at the end. But
yeah,
like mental case.
Like, I think we're led to believe that, like, yes, you know, they wrote police on their own T-shirts. Yeah. That was day one of, police training. And some of them spelled it with an S and then they had to get a new T-shirt. But
an S and no E.
Yeah. Or what, maybe that's
what,
how...
What way you spelling this police?
Maybe that's how it's spelled.
That's how you said Dutch. It, boss.
But even like the fact that the FBI were involved and still there was no, clear... Like even narrative of what took place.
Yeah. It's all basically like throw the bones in the air and then when they land in the sand, you can like pick a story, like pick anything that happened.
I think I would trust. I think if they got a medium... To like smell her jumper.
In fact, they did get a medium.
Okay,
like,
I think I would have more faith.
Oh, she's buried under the bank over
Honestly,
there.
Honestly, I think I'd have more faith in the medium.
Well, before we get into it then with all the gritty details, if you're listening to this for the first time, this is Those Conspiracy Guys. My name is Gordo and we talk about conspiracies, we talk about true crime episodes. And if you want to get in contact with the show, we're on all the different social medias, on the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit. We have our own website, thoseconspiracyguys.com. We also have a YouTube channel, which is, a limbo of states at the moment. I don't really know what I'm going to do with it because YouTube are acting the bollocks. We have a twitch.tv/thoseconspiracyguys, a Twitch page where we'll be live streaming our live chats and live shows. We had a VidMe channel, but now VidMe is gone since the 15th, so I'm kind of fucked for putting up all those documentaries and stuff like that. I did have a load of documentaries on there. We have the lifeblood of the show, which is Patreon, so patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys if you want to help out the show and keep the lights on over here and keep the engines running in conspiracy towers. Patreon is a crowdfunding app, if you don't know already, where you can, you know, drop like $2, $5, $10 and you get certain perks, you get certain behind the scenes media, you get like vlogs from the shows, you get outtakes and you get extra kind of super fan memorabilia, this kind of crack, and you also get discounts on the merchandise that we have in our TeePublic store. So it's teepublic.com/store/thoseconspiracyguys if you want to chat with us directly or chat with me anyway. I'll be on the Discord along with all the other super fans, the TCG super fans on Discord. The link is on the website or it's in the Twitter or Facebook description. And Discord is like a chat room where you go in and you have a chat. It's like a voice and text chat, and there's even video chat as well if you're feeling saucy. And I have it all split into different channels so you guys can talk amongst yourselves. It's not on the surface internet. It's not like on Facebook and people fucking dickheads arguing with you and stuff. This is like a chat room of old, like the Yahoo chat rooms. And you can jump in there and have the chats with the lads. We also have an Anchor app where I will be putting up like daily reports on news and this kind of crack. Little 2-minute audio clips, and you can return fire with your own comments and I'll be able to put them into the channel. And we make like a little kind of a daily podcast. Anchor is a really good app. I really like it. Get on it and have a look. And we also have a sister podcast as well that talks about movies, TV shows and video games called Why Press Play. If you want to go over and check out Why Press Play, we have loads of movies over there and a Twitch channel where we stream from PS4 and Steam as well. So if you want to go and check all that stuff out, send us an email if there's anything we missed in the show. I'm sure there will be. There's fucking loads about this case that could be said. Like literally, I'd say we could do this for 4 hours and still get no further than the Aruban police or the FBI. But if we miss out on anything, if there's some detail that you found somewhere in a documentary or in some document you read, you can send us an email, info@thoseconspiracyguys.com, and let us know what the crack is. So Claire, tell us. Natalie Holloway, she came from Alabama.
She came from Mountain Brook, Alabama.
Mountain Brook, Alabama.
Yeah.
Will I do the whole rest of the show like this?
I would love that.
Anybody from Alabama's gonna be real upset with me right now.
Yeah, so maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should just have some chocolate.
Yeah. Shit happens sometimes.
People go missing.
So she went
Sorry,
on holiday.
Sorry, I'm not laughing about her going missing. I'm laughing about my bad Tom Hanks impression.
It's okay. She's not listening to the episode.
She could be listening. You don't know.
Dear Dose Conspiracy Guys, I didn't like when you were all joking about me going missing.
Yeah, I don't think she sounds like that.
No, probably not.
So she had just completed her Leaving Cert, for high school. She just graduated from high school. Yeah. And I'd say she must have been a woman of means, because at 18, I certainly wasn't hopping on a plane to celebrate the end of my second level education.
Jesus, I was hardly getting on a bus to go into the town to have a drink.
Yeah, same. But
is that a thing that American students do, that they just like, I would say
that some of them were able to afford it. I wouldn't imagine that it's the done thing everywhere.
Yeah.
Let us know, fans.
Yeah, I mean, if you went away, like a lot of kids since I was in school, back in the day, but I mean, I graduated in 2000 from high school, and then nobody went on holidays after you finished your final exams. I mean, in the summer before you got your results, before you realized, oh, you know, my life is now has a glass ceiling put over. But like in the last 5, 6, 7 years, my little cousins and stuff have graduated, and they're going on holidays to Spain.
Santa Panda.
I
don't know. Maybe it was just because it was 5 years later than that like the economy allowed for it. But yeah, anyway. Whatever the reason, herself and a few of her mates decided they booked this all-inclusive resort holiday in Aruba.
Yeah, bed, board, kidnapping comes free.
Yeah, but alcohol was included in the bed and board.
Yeah,
and that's always a dangerous thing with 18-year-olds. Especially, like in Ireland, you know, most 18-year-olds have been drinking for about 3 years.
Yeah, you'd be fed up with drinking,
yeah, you? But in America, like, they're not allowed to drink until they're 21. So I'd say, like limitless alcohol, I would say a lot of people on that trip would find their first low in terms of, like, drinking.
Yeah, like their first awful experience of waking up on the beach with no clothes on.
Yeah, or like, oh God, I really let myself be vulnerable there. And if it wasn't for the decent people around me, that could have gone really badly.
I'm guessing it's like one of those package holidays that kids go on, like, you know, when you're going on the 18 to 30 tours, you're going like, we're all off to sunny Spain.
Yeah.
And it's just like sugary drinks where it's just like shit vodka, like Stalachnikov.
Yeah, I went
poured into like orange juice with like some sugar on shitty plastic glasses, and you're just like hopping it into you to get fucked.
I went on one of those when I was about 22.
Yeah.
And still I was too old for it. Like, I was only drinking about 3 years, and I was like, there was way too much sugar, there was way too much alcohol. And
maybe
it's
that, not that you were too old for it, it's just that you had a little bit of self-respect, I want to say, maybe not. Like,
I'm not even going to claim that I was mature as such, like per se, but like,
that wasn't fun for you. It's still fun for a lot of people.
Yeah, it was just like, I remember the tour guide, it was in Greece, and the tour guide kept going, welcome to Hassanissos, we're going to have such a great time here in Hassanissos. And I was just like, if that woman doesn't stop saying that in that accent, I'm going to leave. I'm finding this really difficult to listen to. So then she kept trying to sell us more trips and more alcohol, and going, and we're going to go on a boat out of Hassanissos, and we're going to drink loads and all this. And we were like, whatever you're doing, let us know, and then we'll do the opposite of that. Because it's just painful.
Yeah. I mean, if you're at that crack, though, I mean, setting the scene for Natalie Holloway's
situation.
I would say, like, questionable sounds victim blaming, but I would say, like, irresponsible behavior.
No, I would say typical. She's 18.
But
she's
also 18. It doesn't, the fact that she got kidnapped and possibly like sexually assaulted and then murdered and then disposed of, like, that doesn't make her actions irresponsible. I mean, there's loads of times when I was being a typical 18 or 19 year old getting fucking hammered, but the way I was drinking and what I was doing was completely irresponsible. Because I was like
it's irresponsible, but it's also typical, especially when like they're legal technically. So like, this is the first time that people can't go, no, you're not getting that because you're not you're not the right age. Like, so they're like, I can drink as much as I want.
Yeah.
Not that it mattered, apparently. It, you know, whether, even if you weren't yet 18, it didn't seem to be enforced very strictly over in Aruba.
And she didn't have any kind of older siblings either to meet her, you know, attitude towards alcohol or drugs or whatever. She was the oldest of two.
Yeah.
And she had no bigger sister to go like, okay, so when y'all's drunk, make sure, you know, you keep your keys, each one pointing out of a finger when you're on the walk home. So if someone comes up behind you, you can just slash their face with your keys.
That's
like
a good
something
tip.
Like that. This kind
I must do that the next time you come at me.
there's no older sister, there's nobody teaching her how to be. All her friends, like when you get girls away like that for the first time away from home, they're going to go wild. And what they did do was drink in these like resort type bars, right?
Yeah, like there were, you know, they were able, like, so there was like a beach and it was all kind of in the one area, you know, so like they could have been at the
away
pool.
Away from the locals. Oh, yeah. Fucking annoying everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't want any reality seeping in. Like, they had paid good money to just be with
sunshine
other
beaches.
With other people who could afford this. So they might have been like sunbathing from, say, midday when they got up out of the pool or at the beach, you know, dipping in and out of the ocean. But like definitely starting the slow drinking, we'll say, the day drinking fairly early on.
And it was with those like sugary spirit drinks, and it was kind of like cocktails and this kind of stuff. Yeah. So that should creep up on you.
You see, the thing is, like, you know, you could drink an Alcopop and feel like you just had a Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
Like that's an iced sugary drink for, you know, well, what would you call it?
Generic flavored ice tube.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So
like
you
a
could
Cool
be,
Pop.
Yeah, Cool Pop. And you could be drinking like, and with enough ice in it because the weather's, you know, it's quite warm.
You wouldn't feel it.
And you're just going, I'm just hydrating, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't realise, like, there's a good, decent, maybe 2 measures of vodka in that drink because it's all sugar. And, like, it hits you all of a slap, you know. And I would imagine that that kind of stuff. But also I think that she was probably really letting her hair down because, by all accounts, she was quite the student.
Yeah.
Like, she was on the honour roll, you know, she I think she was a cheerleader.
She was one of the upper echelons of her high school anyway. Like her parents were pretty like well to do.
Yeah.
Her mother worked in the school system in Mountain Brook, so there were, you know, they had all these kind of notions, but she also had to keep up to a certain standard.
I would think that she had been under an amount of pressure, you know, like you would expect.
Yeah.
And I'd say this was a big like letting it all, you know.
Well, Mountain Brook is a suburb of Birmingham, and like Birmingham is quite, how to describe it, white wealthy, like old money Alabama kind of stuff.
Mm.
So they were all, you know, anybody out from Alabama that's listening to us, you can re-educate me on that. But Birmingham is supposedly like a more affluent area. She's from there. She's blonde. She's white. She's good looking. She has the world at her feet. And now she's in Aruba. Party time. It's a Caribbean island. It's it's a constituent country of the Netherlands. Mm. So like it's Dutch ruled or whatever. So there's a lot of, it's not like going to Jamaica where they put you in a compound and cover you in chicken wire to make sure no black people can get near you unless they're giving you like sugary drinks on a tray with a white shirt, you know. Or it's in like Sandals, Jamaica, where it's fucking miles away from any locals or any shanty towns or anything like that. It's very disparate from reality there. And the guys that were accused and later convicted of her attack, these guys end up preying on that environment, preying on this like young, good-looking, blondie American girls full of piss and vinegar, sugary drinks. You know, spring break, here's my fresh tits. You know, give me some beads. We don't do that here. Give me beads anyway and I'll show you my tits. Get some beads, lads. Like, it's those kind of things. And it's like, these guys came down, like Jorn Vandersloot and the Calpo brothers, who we'll talk about in a second. Like, these guys would come down and prey on those
unsuspecting
women.
Well, I'd say it
was easy prey. Yeah, of course.
And I'd say a lot of people were kind of going, I'm on holidays. Yeah. You know, what happens in Aruba stays in Aruba.
Except herpes, because that shit will follow you home.
Yeah, and all of the other STIs.
Yeah, but, you know, you can get tablets with the rest, but herpes.
You can't get.
That's not just for Christmas. Mm. Okay, go on. So tell us, like, the timeline of the actual stuff that we know that happened, like her last living moments, right?
Okay.
Were she's in Aruba, some shit happens, she meets the boys, and then gone. So what exactly happened that we know as a fact?
Yeah, well, on May 26th, 2005, she landed in Aruba with her class for some partying to celebrate their graduation from high school, as we said. And just like 4 nights later, so they were bopping around for a few nights, having the crack.
Got comfy, they knew the spots, their favourite bars, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so like 4 nights later at around 1:30 a.m., she was seen leaving a club that they had been to another night and they'd enjoyed. It was kind of the spot for the young people. It was called Carlos and Charlie's. And she was actually seen leaving with Van der Sloot. And both of them seemed to be under the influence, according to like witnesses.
Yeah. So for a lot of the stuff that we looked at, it seemed to, and we can chalk this down now to patriarchy, ladies and gentlemen. It seemed to kind of blame her for getting so hammered and being there. And then Jorn Van der Sloot was definitely painted as a kind of a Lothario, a kind of a predatory sexual force that he would go in there and just pick some drunk girl, some blondie one, and just be like, yes, so do you want to come back to my hotel rooms that I've got? I've got this hotel, you know, we go back and do the finger bang. And they were just like, oh, an exotic, a Reuben.
Yeah, and like...
And he's white, so he must be safe. Like, it's the...
Yeah, it was... Like, I'd say he wasn't. You know, like, I mean, again, you're talking about people under the influence who mightn't have the judgment that they would have had. And he probably had been pretty practiced. So, like, I'd say he knew his lines.
Shooting fish in a barrel, but, like, the fish were... Drunk American girls.
Yeah, who
wanted, shooting, I mean like having sex with them.
Who wanted a bit of romance, and he probably knew exactly what to say.
Yeah.
You know.
And his two mates, and he had the Kalpo brothers, Deepak and Satish, and both of those guys were his wingmen. They'd hang around, and often it was said like that they'd, you know, take a few girls home.
Yeah.
Give a bit of dilly-dally.
Like they'd all head off in Deepak's car, like so, like three girls for the three boys, kind of situation. And actually, like, they left in Deepak's car that night.
Yeah.
But they said that they dropped her off. They claimed they brought her out. Now, wait for this. Now, talk about a line.
Go on.
Night shark watching.
Wow. That was what they claimed in their first deposition.
Like, I was innocent at 18, but I'd still pretty much go, do you mean your penis? Is that what the night shark is?
I mean, look it. Everybody has to have an edge, Claire. Were you never told, like, there was one line that was used in my life, which was, you know, do you want to come into my room? I have an old Irish fiver, and it has Bobby.
Sorry.
What?
An old Irish fiver.
Yeah.
Do
you want to come in and see an old Irish fiver? It has George Best's face on it. It was one of these very rare printed Georgie Best £5 notes.
Didn't work, did it?
Many times.
I don't think it was the fiver.
No, it was my charm. But the fiver was a kind of a made up, kind of a funny
thing.
Like
if that was a tongue-in-cheek kind of like a, this is how hilarious my line is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but night shark watching.
That's the same, that's the Aruban version of a Georgie Best £5 note.
I don't think so. I think some people might have been innocent enough to go, oh, night shark, I didn't even hear about that when I was reading my Aruba guidebook.
This young one is over
there. She's only 18.
I know, Claire, but she's full of want.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We don't know that.
Huh?
We don't know that. And in deference to her possible memory, or if you're listening, Natalie, it's all good.
Call somebody if they're looking for you. No, Claire, seriously, like, think about it. This is an 18-year-old girl.
Okay.
Fucking wet thing. Like, I know she's dead and all, but if we're going to fucking tiptoe around...
Don't like that description.
Come on. If we're going to tiptoe around all of these descriptions and all of these different ways of saying...
No, I'm not tiptoeing. I just don't like it.
I'm saying if on the show we weren't to say something for fear of upsetting a family member of a dead person that wasn't even fucking listening, like, we'd say nothing about nobody ever.
True. I stand corrected.
I'm saying she was a fucking wet thing. Her mates were wet things. They went over to Aruba to have a few drinks, maybe, you know, fall in love for a weekend, or at least like 45 minutes or so. And, you know, go home and be like, yeah, let's get into the humdrum of college life.
Yeah.
And bring that kind of sexual energy that, like, oh, I had a great time after 10. Like, she went off with these guys in the car, and the testimony of witnesses goes, she was hanging out at the side of the car going, woo, Aruba! Like, she was mad for it. And she wasn't getting in that car to go fucking night shark watching. That's a line the boy said, like the Georgie Best £5 note. That's like, hey, do you want to go look at some sharks? A.K.A. my dick in there and around your mouth. She was all like, woo, sharks. You know what I'm saying? There was a definite, and it's not a victim blaming statement. There was a definite non-verbal contract there of, hey, we're going to get out of here. The bar's closing. Do you want to come back to our place for...
I've said this to you before and I'll say it again. I think 50% possibility that yes, she knew exactly what she was doing, and 50% she didn't have a clue what she was doing. She was just going with the good vibes.
Yes, and also another 50%, so we're at 150 now. Another 50% that she was absolutely fucking bananas drunk from been drinking all day.
Yeah.
And according to other witnesses, she may have also been on drugs or at least drugged involuntarily. But I think it was voluntary drugs that she was on.
But again, yeah, that's speculation, but it's possible.
Yeah, very much speculation. But like,
I mean,
she's bollocks.
Her hanging out some good looking guy is like, crack.
Yeah, she want to come for a ride in the car. We go look at some sharks.
Yeah.
And she, that's what it was. The Dutch guy was like, hey, you want to go look at some sharks? And she's like, oh my God, did he say you want to have sex with me? Yeah, sharks. We can go down onto the beach and, you know, there's some sharks.
So then she started pulling the jeans off him and he was like, what?
Yeah, that's what happened.
What about the sharks?
And he's like, well, hey, I'm only here for some sharks. And she's like, yeah, that's what I'm here for too. That's what happened.
Oh,
big
right.
misunderstanding.
Ah, okay. Breakdown in communication.
But well, your man Joran van der Sloot was a dirty dog. He was a dirty dog
by all accounts. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, he wasn't his first rodeo.
No.
Or a second or a hundredth.
No,
I'd say.
And he was like a pathological liar.
Yeah.
These Calpo brothers were his wingmen. Mm. They were driving lads all around the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean,
now they claim, like van der Sloot claims that she fell down exiting the car at a very convenient time of 2 a.m.
Yeah. So they're half an hour away from the pub.
Yeah. And and then, like van der Sloot said, oh, she was approached by a man wearing dark glasses as she approached the hotel.
Yeah, this is one of these guys. He was witnessed by two security guards. And they said, oh, yeah, that lad, he was just like hanging around. It's like, why is a guy wearing sunglasses at nighttime at 2 a.m.? Maybe he just wanted to look cool.
Mm.
Again, very spurious, very questionable witness testimony. Nobody was ever investigated. Nobody was ever looked up. Nothing ever came of it. Just another... what if to the story of Natalie Holloway, like some dude in dark glasses. Now, all of these stories are coming from Joran van der Sloot's testimony.
Yeah.
That lad is 10 pounds of shit in a 5 pound bag. He is so full of shit, right? And the guys who were interviewing him, the chief of police at the time, said in this documentary that we were watching, he said he changed the basic facts in the story, like the basic bedrock of what happened that night changed like unrecognizably 3 times.
Yeah.
And then all the little small details, like what time to the minute, with the names of people, like what they said, they all changed. He said 25 times there was important notes and points in the evidence, the circumstantial evidence that he was given. 25 times they changed. Like, he told so many different stories. And it's, you know, when you're a good liar, you have to have a good memory. This guy is fucking full of bullshit. He's a pathological liar. Later on, people would say, when we find out what he actually did, people would say that he got off on it. He was just playing games with those police. Like, he would play games with the girls in the bars, making up a story about who he was or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just a fucking mad cunt.
Maybe. And like, kind of allowed to get away with whatever he wanted to do up to that point. So he was kind of like, he probably felt a bit infallible, like, you know, just try and stop me.
Yeah.
An FBI consultant, like, who looked at the whole case, one of the things he said was like, that would have been his first red flag, that your man couldn't tell a straight story.
Of course.
Like, I know that's an obvious thing.
In profiling, yeah, but in profiling.
But even in terms of, as you said, the foundations of the story, he couldn't even keep those straight.
He seems like a psychopath. Like,
yeah, like most people would, like, they'd be like, okay, well, I went to the toilet at 11. I know I did.
Yeah.
So I'll hold on to that fact because that's kind of true and it fits in with my fake bit. But like, he'd be like, I went to the toilet. No, I didn't go to the toilet.
Yeah.
You know,
full 180 on all of his facts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why would you do that if not to fuck with the police, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they, in further investigation from other witnesses, they found out that there may be like a much more sinister operation happening here with these lads, like these Calpo brothers and this van der Sloot, that possibly, and it had been done before, and there was text messages from the computers of van der Sloot when they were all investigated after this case, after the case was almost closed, FBI came in and they had to do, like, 2-3 years later, had to do some serious investigation. And even up until last year, the investigation is still open, looking through messages between the Calpo brothers and van der Sloot. And Joran van der Sloot was sending them messages going, hey, watch out, pimps. Are we going to get some bitches tonight to fuck them? And the Calpo brothers are like, yeah, where are we going? Carlos and Charlie's? Yes, that's where all the bitches with the big titties should be. Like, purely...
But like messages like, I'm just going to... I'm just on my way to the beach to fuck someone. I'll see you in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, very... I'm just grabbing a burger.
Yeah, he was actually grabbing a burger. You said it, Claire. I'm sorry.
So, I said it innocently.
I know. I'm sorry to you, not to okay, everybody else. But it just seems that like these guys had it organized. And so organized, it was found out by these messages, that they had even like a spot, like a pussy hut, to bring these girls to. It was like at a place called the Mill Hotel. And these three guys, Deepak and Satish, these guys and Joran van der Sloot, all together would go three ways on paying for a hotel room. And in the Mill Hotel, and then they get a girl or two or three.
Yeah.
And bring her back, and you know,
they even had you know, like a hierarchy, like the white girls went with van der Sloot.
Yeah, because he could speak English and he was able to get the Americans.
Yeah. And then
like, and the lads were speaking Dutch and French, so they were able to get the rest of them.
Yeah.
But it just seems so fucked, like that you know, Joran could go in, pick some, like go, they'll fuck tonight, and go like, and there's lads that can do that. I could never do that. But there's guys who have like pickup artist magic who can just go in and go, who's vulnerable or horny around here, and just be like, and just be able to find.
And it's reading energy in the most negative way.
But he went into these places. He was able to find the girls. They bring him back to the Mill Hotel. There was even testimony of like from the one of the Calpo brothers saying like, yeah, you know, we had one girl was like fucking Joran, and one girl was fucking me, and then Satish was getting a blowjob on the balcony. Like that's how it went.
Yeah.
That they were sending these messages all together. And it was like a fuck hotel.
Yeah.
So to go out at night to get some pussy.
Mm.
Like it was all very superficial and, you know, very, very acquisitional. It wasn't for love. They weren't finding, you know.
I know. And then, you know, you look at a lot of like resorty type areas where, you know, people live permanently. Yeah. And I suppose they're all kind of like, oh, I'll seize this opportunity.
That's the way it goes. That is
but
the
like these guys were not so much seizing opportunities as really creating a situation where it was all very convenient. Like the hotel room thing, that was weird.
Yeah, but as well though,
considering, I mean, they lived there.
I've been out on nights out in town and, you know, the lads know that their house is a fucking bomb site and they meet this whopper bird. And they just pull out a credit card and just be like, okay, let's go.
Get out of town.
Yeah, I mean, years and years ago. And they weren't like my friends, but they were people I would be in the company of.
Right.
Partaking in alcohol and narcotics.
Right.
And then they just, you know, do that stuff. And I'd be like, oh, cool. I mean, it happens.
And because their bed isn't clean?
No, because they'll probably live in a shithole because they spend all their money on drugs.
Oh, right.
But at the same time, you know.
Okay, so that's not crazy.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't going to fucking, if they live in Aruba, they're not going to, like your man Joran van der Sloot was only a young lad, probably still living with his parents. He's not going to bring some young one back to his parents' house and be like, shh,
like
she's
bananas. Every 10 minutes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So they're bringing him back to a hotel room and doing all that stuff. Now, he also had been kind of nabbed afterwards for, like he admitted to filming in one of these Mill Hotel sessions, filming a 14-year-old girl having sex with him. And he didn't know she was 14. And I was like, what the fuck is that bitch doing out drinking in a night out in Aruba at 14?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's probably a ball dropped by her parents there. It's not fucking dirty dancing around here. Yeah. You know what I mean? But Joran was still a young dude who had, you know, a bit of a charm. He was a good looking guy. And he was able to get into these young ones.
Mm.
So after Natalie's disappearance, these lads were arrested and questioned, right?
Yeah, that was on June 9th. So she went missing on May 30th.
Yeah.
And on June 9th, 2005, van der Sloot and the Calpo brothers were arrested and the focus of this case was on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So two other...
The last ones to see her alive, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Two other security guards were briefly arrested. I suppose we should say the last ones that people saw her with.
Yeah.
Yes. And then two other security guards were briefly arrested because they were kind of known for cruising for drunk girls after the clubs closed, but they were released without charge. But I'm sure there was loads of people doing that.
It seems like the place to be doing it.
Yeah. So
I mean, any bouncers out there would tell you that the sexual attentions of young ladies after 3 a.m. can be directed at anyway.
Yeah.
It's like a monkey with a machine gun.
Mm.
Do you know?
Yeah. A week later, a local DJ... Steve Gregory Crows was arrested and questioned, but he was released very shortly after.
Yeah.
I really don't know why, but anyway.
This is DJ Diablo.
Yeah.
Do you remember
the
that
devil
guy?
Yeah.
he was,
who later had a club called Confession Club.
Yeah, imagine.
Aptly named.
Yeah. He was in the documentary that we watched from Journeyman TV, and the guy was ringing him saying, "Hey, people say that they saw you at Carlos and Charlie's that night, and you said that the police said you weren't there, and then you changed your statement." Very suspicious activity from DJ Diablo.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he should almost have been definitely investigated.
Devilish.
He was definitely on the FBI kind of investigation list.
Yeah.
They never got to interview him. But he was placed at the bar where Natalie and the lads were that night. There's pictures of him in the bar that night, and he totally denies it. Why would you deny it if you were guilty, motherfucker?
Yeah. He even said he was working when he wasn't working and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
So he says in his statement that he was out until 4:30 a.m. Obviously, that was a, because the bar that he was supposed to be at, and all the bars pretty much in the area, closed at 2. It's like, what the fuck were you doing 2.5 hours? Were you having watching sharks down on the beach?
Well, actually, the lads, Vandersloot and the Calcutta brothers, actually changed their sharks story, maybe because it sounded like they were talking about sex. I'm not sure.
The accent wouldn't
with
get
the
over
FBI
that thing.
People.
That's it.
But they were changing their stories frequently. So now they weren't shark watching with her. All I can hear is sex now when I say shark. But they were dropped off together near the hotel, and Vandersloot left her on the beach. So
that's
that was
official,
the next story.
That was
that
the story that lasted
to.
For the whole summer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In his investigations. Now, in another one of the documentaries that we watched, the police chief proudly announced that he kept Vandersloot there for hours and hours and hours, and he nearly broke him. But instead, Vandersloot was able to, like a genius, be able to make up all of these alternative timelines and all of these different stories and have everything fit to suit him as more and more evidence became clear. So he obviously was ahead of the game to know exactly what happened. So when other people were telling, well, we just talked to this guy over here and we're coming back to you, Vandersloot. You said that this happened and this happened. What about that? And he's like, well, actually, I can totally explain that away. And he just fucking totally explained it away. And these cops were like biting their knuckles. He said that they drove a certain amount of the way.
Yeah.
He got to the beach, down by the fishermen's huts on the beach, near enough to Carlos and Charlie's, and he had her on the ground. And he was, you know, playing the lady harp, giving her the fucking, and she was loving it, but she was falling in and out of consciousness because she was bananas.
Yeah.
And we all know after a few drinks, we're a little bit drunk and we get a little bit of a ride in a warm car, we start to get a bit sleepy. And then you're dragged onto the beach by three men and you're like forcefully, semi-unconsciously fingered. Like, we've all been there. And then he just went, oh, she passed out. So he wasn't going to do any sex stuff to her.
Yeah.
So he just got up and left her there. Were the two lads waiting in the car? Was he like, hang on a minute, I'll just ride her and I'll leave her and be back in a minute? Like, a lot of stuff happened in that 45 minutes that nobody knows about. What really happened. Only Jorn Vandersloot and maybe the Calpo brothers. And no one else in the world knows it that's alive now. Like, weird.
Yeah.
He said he got her on the beach, doing some, like, fingering stuff. She was falling asleep. Then he bounced. And left her there. And that was his story for the whole summer.
Yeah.
Seems to me that she could have woke up. She could have went back to her hotel. Somebody else could have came along and found her and went, oh, you know, free body.
Yeah, there had been an issue like 9 days before her arrival.
Yeah.
In Aruba with another lady, coincidentally enough, at one of those huts where she was like looking for seashells quite innocently.
Yeah.
Like just after the sun rose, like taking an early walk on the beach, and this guy who had no pants, no underwear, no nothing on.
Only a horn.
Yeah. And a car running.
Yeah.
Tried to get her into the car.
Tracy Allen was that woman's name.
Yeah.
And she said, I saw her on the video and she, inappropriately, I think, wearing some dreadlocks. Not right. You know, I have to say, Tracy, like, leave it straight. Like, don't be wearing dreadlocks. And she was saying that as her walk down the beach was completely unimpeded by anybody. But on the walk back, this guy had driven the car out to block her way to get back to the hotel and had the doors of the car opening with the horn. Yeah. And he was like, come on, bitch. And she for 4 minutes, she stared him down and called for help.
I'm assuming she was struggling,
Well, I guess they were doing the whole, like dancing to the side.
But she could definitely identify him. She was 100% sure that she could identify him and did.
Yeah, she reported it to the police, and people came along and your man got spooked and he drove off. She said, and gave a report to the police, she said it was a 25-year-old dude with dark hair and dark eyes and octagonal glasses. She got a photo fit done, and then they were able to put together a lineup. And during the lineup, Tracy was able to pick the man out of the lineup. But after he was identified by the victim, he was allowed to be set free.
Yeah.
And he went to Colombia.
It was a really weird thing because they didn't realise that they already had him in custody.
Yeah.
Because he had outstayed his visa.
Yeah.
So they were already kind of in motions to deport him, I'd say, anyway.
Yeah.
And then when they went, actually went like, oh yeah, is he still in custody? No, he's not. Oh, where is he? We can't find him.
Gone.
He's gone.
Mental.
Like that seems like...
Like they already had him. Then they released him.
Yeah.
Had him in a lineup. Tracy Allen identified him while he was like...
I'm not sure that he was in a lineup. She identified him from photographs. No, she saw
the photographs. Yeah, yeah. But the photographs were from like a photo lineup or whatever. And she was like, that's the guy, that's the guy. They had him for having no visa, right? And while he was released like from being held for having no visa, he ended up doing this thing to her, possibly picking up Natalie Holloway on the beach and throwing her drunk in the back of his car. And getting what he tried to get off Tracy Allen, but he had no resistance from Natalie Holloway because she was bananas at 4 a.m. Like, that's fucking... Why didn't they look for that guy? Do you know? Why are they still not looking for that guy?
But also, Vandersloot might have known. Like, think about it. Like, he's a local. Yeah. It's not outside the realm of possibility for a Tracy Allen story to have hit the news, the local news, or at least the newspaper. So he might have been like... That's a good story to go with because I heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
That there was a guy down at the hut.
That Vandersloot is like, I blame him on this
so
guy.
If I've left her down at the hut, what can you do when you live in a shoe?
Would you imagine that the octagonal glasses man, he, after doing that thing to Tracy Allen, then he saw about Natalie Holloway and heard on the news. She was found with the fisherman's huts and he's like,
I'm done.
That fucking shit I did the other morning, I'm definitely going to get blamed for this. Yeah. I'm out. And he's gone on a plane to Colombia.
Who knows? We'll never know.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to find that cunt. Like, they know who he is because they had his name.
Yeah.
They had his photo and they had his account that he didn't have a visa to be able to be in Aruba. Like, why are they not still looking for him? Interpol or the FBI or CIA or something like
they
that.
They weren't too pushed.
Well, I don't know, man. So the alternative then from the left on the beach story is that she got up.
Yeah.
And walked back to her hotel room.
Yeah, so Natalie's room was opened in the hotel 3 times with her key card during that night. Like they could tell, you know, that her room had been accessed.
So maybe she did wake up from the beach.
Yeah, and now this was at the time like that they can't count for. We'll say the, you know, between
2 and 4.
So. 2 and 4:30, yeah. So, you know, there's lots of theories posited about that. Like, for example, like a friend could have had her card.
Yeah, did they swap cards?
You know, were they kind of messing around, like that kind of stuff. Mm. Again, it could have been like the person who did something to her, you know, seizing an opportunity for maybe like, okay, now I know I've disposed of her. She's not going to be in that room. So I can have a look and see, is there anything worth robbing in the room? Money, whatever, valuables. There's lots of different, you know, ways that it could be explained. What's really strange is that they didn't actually, like, ask the friends.
Yeah, didn't interview them.
Like, instead of, like, you know, if that's me and I'm thinking, like, say, for example, the most recent hotel stay I've had, like, my sister went into the room, my other sister went into the room.
And you can even guess around before midnight, after midnight.
You know, while I was downstairs. Yeah. So, like, you'd think the first thing you would say is, come here, like, who had access to her room? Did you go into her room last night?
It's one of the basic stuff. Like, you have to get the timeline of events. Like, that's a bit like the basic investigation stuff. Yeah. And they just were like, oh, what are we doing? I don't know. Like, maybe they didn't have that many cases of that type in that area.
Yeah. I also think it's strange that, like, you know, she walked, like, if she did go back to her room, if she did wake up on the beach and go, oh, sketch, going back for a shower, and did go into her room and for some reason left her room again, but why would she be in it and out of it 3 times? Like, that's confusing.
Yeah.
But, like, even if she did do that, like, why they didn't have any CCTV of her?
I wonder, was any of her clothes missing or any of her luggage missing? Mm. Like, nobody has said that maybe Natalie Holloway just had had enough and she woke up on the beach and went, ugh, my life, fuck my life, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And just went up and packed her bags and just fucked off. someplace.
Well, I don't think she packed her bags. I think her stuff was still there.
Yeah. Nothing was robbed.
Well, I don't know.
It's very weird. I mean, who's going in and out of a hotel room three times between 2 and 4 in the morning using Natalie's key card? And it was identified as hers. But like you said, the police didn't ask the friends. Did they swap? I don't know, man. Like, were they in the hotel and they were down in the hotel lobby getting drinks because the bar had closed? Were they in for the after hours drinks or something like that? Is there any such service in that hotel? But none of that information is available, and none of the testimonies from her friends or anything are available because the fucking police didn't ask.
Yeah.
So it's all speculation on some PBS documentary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's actually bananas what was left out. So for the arrests then, we talked about DJ Diablo, we talked about Vandersloot and Calpo getting pinched. And like all of these arrests, Claire, came from the testimonies of Deepak and Satish and Joran Vandersloot. Like both three of those guys changing their stories all the time, like, you know, being totally sketchy, being interviewed for hours and hours and hours on end, and then being released. And then, you know, these kind of stories to try and put something together really fucked the police up, I think. And
well, I think one of their mistakes was being a bit too cocky in the beginning. If it was me, I'd be going, okay, we have a fair idea of who's, you know, guilty, but let's get as much evidence as we possibly can.
Yeah, of course.
Instead, they were like, we got him. Sit back and relax and order the donuts, boys. Yeah. Like,
I shot the clerk. What? I shot the clerk. That kind of shit.
Yeah, like, they didn't look for any CCTV footage until 3 weeks after the incident.
Yeah, and it was all recorded over.
Yeah, because like most CCTV videos are kind of on a 2 week loop.
Yeah.
So they'll just go back to the beginning and record over, like, unless somebody has tried to access the tapes before that. But I can't remember how, but I knew that. So I'm not a police person.
Yeah.
So
Sure we've worked in some retail environments where there's security cameras and you know how they work. Like, it's,
yeah, but also that, like, is that not the first thing you do is
of
go,
course.
There's a person missing. So in the 48 hours since she hasn't been seen, let's try and pin her down everywhere she possibly could have been identified from CCTV.
Look at Stephen Paddock, the Las Vegas shooter from Mandalay Bay.
Yeah.
They still don't have footage of him anywhere near in or around the hotel, carrying a gun, going through the lobby, being in his room, walking the halls. Hundreds of cameras all around the whole of Las Vegas, and not fucking one of them has him walking with anything that may look like a rifle. And yet the lad that exploded the other day in New York,
yeah,
a couple of weeks ago, like, they had him on the day, they had fucking footage of him blowing up like a packet of crisps that you squeezed too hard, you know. Like, on the day, yeah, they had footage of him, and yet there's nothing of Stephen Paddock. So if there's no video evidence of her, it could be on purpose. This could be like one of those rinky-dink, like, let's put it down to police, you know, incompetence.
But that's
but
what
it
I
could
mean.
Be somebody covering some shit up. Now, the main suspect in this case is Joran Vandersloot.
Yeah.
His dad's a judge.
Yeah, he's got contacts. Like,
do you know, Paulus Vandersloot was a big dick in Aruba. Like, yeah, he knew the fucking crack.
And Joran has the confidence of a very privileged young male.
Yeah, and a psychopath.
Yeah, yeah. So he's pretty confident that he's, you know, going to get off, I think.
Well, from his own testimony, he tied himself up in knots, but the police couldn't put that on him one way or the other.
No.
And I think when you know you've no evidence, you've no evidence. Unlucky,
yeah,
son.
Yeah.
Like, you can say that you want to the police and they'll never catch you. But they did have one eyewitness that placed them at the scene of the crime, right?
Yeah, a gardener from a nearby country club said that he saw Vandersloot driving into the club on the night of the disappearance around 3 a.m.,
because she said he wanted to play 9 holes.
A jogger claims to have seen him, actually. Well, seen a man burying a blonde-haired woman in a landfill later that day. So that all sounds very like, oh yeah, I saw that. Oh, why? Do you think that pertains to the case?
Like, fucking joggers finding dead bodies.
You know, like, oh, I just thought, like, I was just running and at first I thought it was like a rare bird, and then I realised it was a human head. And then I went home and had my Frosties. Like,
but there was a $1 million reward for information,
yeah,
at this point. Like, this was,
and you're always going to have a few mentors. Yeah, yeah, you are. Like, oh God,
Elvis,
you know,
is alive.
And I mean, like, they didn't, you know, no more than the cops, they didn't have any evidence to say that their tip wasn't true.
Yeah.
So, they could probably say anything they wanted.
But if anything was found, you want to say something as broad as like, I saw her. Where'd you see her? On the island.
Yeah.
Whereabouts? Near here.
She had blonde hair.
Yeah. She had eyes.
Yeah.
Like, it's very general. So if they did get that, they could claim some of the reward. But without any evidence.
Yeah.
Like an embarrassingly small amount of evidence, and most of it circumstantial. They had to release the three boys. The Calpo brothers and Vandersloot were given their marching orders, and they went out into the public, including the mother and father. Now, the mother, I think, was so self-righteous and just being like, we knew our little Joran didn't do anything, and so this is, the police have was an apology. And Joran Vandersloot, standing behind her, beaming, like, being like, got away with it, you fucking cunts. Like,
yeah.
I'm looking at that.
She was pretty self-righteous.
Really self-righteous.
But you could see how, her little baby, her little schmoopy, schmoopy loop. Like, she might have genuinely thought, how fecking dare you accuse my son of anything?
Yeah. Plus, like, the fact there was no evidence and the dad was a judge. So, and she's like, one of the ladies of Aruba. You know, her husband has a bit of power, and she's, how dare you accuse my Joran of, fingering an unconscious girl on the beach?
Yeah.
Which is what he did and admitted
also,
to.
Yeah, so. I was just going to say, he also went on like to do some interviews where he claimed that she wanted it. To me, that smacks of that and the lying and all that. It smacks of like...
Catch me.
Yeah, but also like I can't resist the interviews.
Yeah.
It's almost his downfall.
That's the thing. He put himself out there, put his head above the parapets and said, like, look into me. I'm going to be fucking smiling about this.
Yeah.
I mean, at least, like, JonBenet Ramsey's older brother knew to fucking keep his mouth shut until he was in his late 20s and all the evidence was definitely gone. Like,
yeah.
He's coming out on Dr. Phil smiling like a fucking mental patient.
Yeah.
Being like, I didn't do anything. Yeah. Which is just painted smile,
Yeah.
Like...
Just like smile like it's Christmas.
This guy was out like before the end of the summer going, she was hammered.
Yeah.
I mean, she was totally fucked up. And
she couldn't resist me.
I was fingering her.
I sound like a bad Bond. she couldn't resist.
A Dutch Sean Connery. So it's just like so brazen of him to come out and say all that stuff.
Yeah.
So the story he went with the press was that he left her drunk on the beach. He was picked up by Deepak in the car at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, nice,
so,
respectable guy.
Yeah, he fingered her unconscious for an hour and then was just like, nah, I'm not getting out of this.
Nothing's happening here.
But then in court, when he was Deepak Calpo was given his testimony, he contradicted this testimony, and they were all then contradicting each other when it got to court. I think the squeeze came down on the Calpo brothers, and they were like, "Okay, fuck, we missed our telling some truths, or else we're going down forever."
And didn't they allude to the fact that she may be somewhere on the beach?
Yeah,
not alive.
Yeah. But there was loads of different sightings of, like, last year, I think, a jaw, like, every so while, every 6 or 8 months, like, something washes up, like a bracelet or,
a
paw. Is it a paw? What's it called? A hoof? Like, something washes up on the beach. There was a jaw washed up on the beach.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's her. And then the test is like, no, it's a man's jaw. It was raging.
God damn it. But what man? Doesn't matter. It's not Natalie Holloway.
Yeah. Some other
Don't you know she's the only missing person that matters?
Yeah. Some guy going
around.
We've
got one in Aruba. We've got one in Portugal. That's Madeline McCann.
Yeah.
Hashtag find Madeline.
Famous missing girls.
Yeah.
There's some guy going around Aruba going, hey, have anyone seen my jaw? It's like, no, I didn't. Didn't find it. Sorry, buddy.
Hush up.
I've been eating soup for the last while. I can't feel it, eh?
Wouldn't have never cup of warm water.
So then almost 2 years after this whole incident happened.
Yeah.
On the 27th of April 2007, the Vandersloot family home was investigated by a team of 20 investigators out to solve this case come hell or high water.
Yeah, big team.
Aruba had already spent, I think the guy, the chief of police said, 3% of their entire annual police budget, which turned out to be $3 million on this case. And they absolutely needed a result because it was like one case, 3% of the whole year's budget. Like, fuck me.
Yeah.
So on the 12th of May, 2007, the Calpo home was similarly searched, but they refused the search. They said, you can't come in here because there was no paperwork. And the police stated for the reason to get the search was to get a better image of the place where an offence may have been committed. So at that point, they thought that something had either gone on in either Vandersloot or Calpo's house.
Yeah.
They didn't know about the hotel room at this point because the computers weren't investigated and stuff. So this is you know, the rumblings of their stories coming apart, you know, like wet cotton wool. So in November 2007, after some new evidence turned up, both Calpo brothers and Vandersloot were arrested again on suspicion of manslaughter of Natalie Holloway, because they were the last ones to see her alive. All the evidence pointed to something you done, you hid the body. But they were released again after only a few days by an Aruban judge because there was insufficient evidence that Natalie Holloway died of a violent crime, and she could have just been left out on the beach and died from
exposure or natural sources.
Couldn't prove one way or the other. There was no evidence, and the boys were sound. And then on December 18, 2007, officially, the case was declared closed by the prosecutor. So two and a half years after she got missing, she's dead somewhere. We can't fucking prove it. Case closed.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, Dave Holloway, the Natalie's father, he launched this new search, and they gave out a $1 million reward, and it was all over
the parents were very unhappy with very how unhappy. It was dealt with.
Yeah, very unhappy.
Like, and they were like, show me one thing that they did properly. Yeah.
The mother was very effusive on American news media, and they came out and they were doing interviews like Debate the Band and all the Daily Shows. She was talking about it the whole time, offering this big reward for any information, and It was all fruitless.
And they actually had to stop it because they ran out of money.
Ran out of money, couldn't do it anymore. Public, I guess, you know, it's not like with Madeleine McCann where they're propped up by a UK government fund that gives them money every year, you know.
Well, this was early 2008 that ran out of money, so.
Yeah, and the American economy was tanking, and they were like, look it. Fucking one bitch went missing in Aruba. Sorry, lads.
Yeah, and I'd say people that might have otherwise like had fundraisers or benefits were kind of going, no, I'm just gone out of business, so like I can't donate to that fund. Sorry.
Tough shite.
So it was a bad time. Yeah. Early 2008 in America. Not good.
For anybody. But after this then, after this case was closed, loads of true crime aficionados started jumping in on this case. They were like, something fishy there. Like, that wasn't closed. These guys got arrested twice, got let off twice. Like, fucking weird shit going on. And there was a feature film made. There was a Lifetime, what do you call them? Like a Lifetime daytime movie, straight to DVD movie was made about Natalie Holloway's case. And she, played by some budding starlet that ended up doing porn or something, whatever.
Yeah.
One of these things, like, we have to tell Natalie's story. And loads of people jumped on it. And then one guy, who was a Dutch crime reporter, claimed that he had solved the case. His name was Peter de Vries. And he came forward with a confession from Vandersloot, apparently. He had secretly recorded urine when he was interviewing him.
Yeah.
And Vandersloot had admitted to, like, yeah, we did that and we buried her or whatever. And Joran Vandersloot then was in the spotlight again, and he came out and he said that this was false, that when he was being interviewed by the investigator, this pathological liar, psychopathy started to creep out, and he admitted to the public, I was just telling him whatever he wanted to hear to make him go away.
A news story would come out of his mouth every time. It's like, almost like, oh, let's see what this one sounds like.
But this guy was a crime reporter who was writing a big story.
Yeah.
So Vandersloot wanted to give him something to get his teeth into. So he's like, and then, and the guy was like, oh my God. And then he released it, and Joran was like, ah, you dope. That was all bullshit. But because of that recording, the case was reopened that day. Like, that's pretty damning on Vandersloot's
pretty irresponsible of him if he were innocent. Like, would you be doing that if you were innocent?
No, shit yourself and say nothing. Don't fucking talk to the
innocent
cops.
Innocent or guilty.
Don't talk to the cops. Don't say nothing. Don't say you weren't in a place, because if you're proven to be in that place, then everything you say afterwards will be thrown out. You look guilty to a jury no matter what.
Yeah.
So this secret footage that de Vries got shows a guy called Patrick van der Eem, who kind of sidled into Vandersloot, and he listens to this this confession that he gives.
Yeah.
He was smoking marijuana that night. She was hammered. He gave her a little bit of marijuana. She started pulling the greener, then started convulsions and stuff like that on the beach. He tried to revive her. He tried to do CPR. I know he said ESP. He tried to fucking... Oh, I can tell what you're thinking. He started doing CPR to her, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and then she stopped moving, and he's like, what can I do? She became unresponsive, and he said, then he called his friend, he called Deepak and said, come here, man, you gotta fucking, pick me up. The two of them, Deepak said, you go home, we'll take care of it, and they took care of the body, and Vandersloot at this point was 19 years old.
Yeah.
Coming out with this shit from a guy who's quite obviously some kind of investigator, like getting his trust, like leaning into him.
Yeah.
And he had the world's media at his feet for 2 years.
Yeah.
Telling 25 different stories.
Yeah, and if he was a psychopath or a narcissist like that, he would have really enjoyed that.
Milk and honey to him. He'd love that shit.
Mm.
So it turns out, after all of this whole big debacle and the case being reopened and everything, that Vander Eam was actually an old friend of Vander Sloot and was looking to make a few bob off the publicity of the case. So he got the confidence of De Vries and said, "Oh, I know him. I'll do that for you. Give me a few bob." And then he got into the papers and they were all over the TV.
Yeah.
So he himself then, Vander Eam was himself then caught on secret footage saying that he knew the identity of the other man and was offered a bribe for his silence. Did he or did he not? Was this like a double jeopardy? Was this like a, like they all knew what the crack was? Was Vander Eam the other guy? Was it Deepak Kalpo? Like who, were they all in it together?
Yeah.
So weird. Such a fucking weird thing to do to this crime reporter who brings this case. Like, the case was closed.
Yeah.
And they brought it all, dragged it all back up onto the surface for guys that were innocent. They went, maybe we're guilty. Nah, we're innocent. Or are we? Like, it's fucked up. It's that's like taunting the world.
Yeah, that's really strange behavior.
Like a girl's murder on their hands, right?
Yeah. Like, so, you think if it had been closed, they'd be like, we're never talking about this again. Listen, please,
we got away with it. We fucking got away with it, right?
Yeah.
So, Vander Eam, like, you know, after being caught then telling, you know, the bullshit story, this testimony that Vander Sloot gave to De Vries was all thrown away. And then Vander Eam lost his own freedom because he was arrested and imprisoned less than a year after this debacle because he hit his girlfriend in the head with a crowbar.
Oh, right.
What fucking bullshit is this? Like, these were deplorable people. These were deplorable people having, like, fucking adult situations with people who didn't want them to be had with, and, you know, playing, using people as objects. It was like such a fucking weird puppetry game, like, do you know, with the media, with the reporters, with the police, with Natalie herself. Like, that's a fucking fucked up way to be going on, right?
Yeah,
big time. So with all that negative attention, right, Vander Sloot was still looking for his bit, still looking for a few bob. Vander Eam, his mate, had gone to jail.
Yeah.
Like, he was on his Toblerone out in the world with a murder on his hands, quite possibly, allegedly, right?
Allegedly.
A year after the case was closed, Vander Sloot, because the case was still somewhat high profile, there was an American girl went missing outside of the country, he told Fox News that he sold Natalie Holloway into sexual slavery for money and was paid for his silence after the case became worldwide news accidentally. Like, that's some fucking claim to be telling a news organization.
But that just shows you how, like, there was no limit to how crazy his stories were.
Like, audaciousness of the highest order.
Yeah, like, it was like he was like, oh, this Fox News better be a good one. I know. I'll do sex trafficking. That'll work.
So, check it out. So, yeah, a year after the case was on the world stage, it was just after being closed.
Mm.
He's yearning, you know, for a little bit of extra. Yeah. Look at me, right?
I'm not getting any attention.
Yeah. So, on the 24th of November 2008, he comes out and tells Fox News that he had sold Natalie Holloway into sexual slavery for money and that he was paid for his silence from the sexual slave buyers. And, like, his main piece of evidence was a recording he had of a conversation between him and his father.
Sounds plausible.
And his dad knew about the sex trafficking. Now, his dad was a judge, and obviously he was getting into him to go like, oh, how can I get it? Hey, dad, how can I get away with this? I got this girl, I picked her up, showed it to some sex slavers, and, you know, now she's all over the fucking news. What do I do? So he did this whole fake tape thing with his dad. Turns out to be a fake, like, it's fake. Like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Like, he comes onto Fox News.
Yeah.
And say, and this is a case that everybody would know about. It was famous still in America. It was like just, she, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Wasn't even a cold case. It was 3 years old. Coming to Fox News going, yeah, I sold her to sex slavery.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm the victim because, you know, I was told, keep quiet or you're dead.
Yeah. My father said it in exactly this voice. Keep quiet or you're dead.
Can you imagine the fake, you know,
yeah,
conversation between the two
crazy.
Of them? Mental.
Like a 6-year-old wouldn't try that story.
No.
Because they'd be like, no, it's
just
not
like
really.
Writing a note to get off sick from school. It's like,
yeah.
Dear Gordon's teacher, Gordon cannot come to school today.
I cannot.
Because he's sick. Signed, my dad. Like, yeah. That's fucking... So this wasn't his only, quest for fame.
Yeah.
Another shake of the dice, another shake of the bag.
And like, he gives it just over a year every time. And then yeah. He's like, I could do it a few euro.
Yeah, it's coming up to Christmas.
Yeah,
let's see what happens.
To buy.
So in 2010, he came out publicly and offered the Holloway Legal Counsel the location of Natalie's body for $250,000.
Oh yeah, like it's a steal.
Quarter of a mil for a bag of bones.
It's only a quarter of what the parents had been offering.
So you're saving money.
Yeah.
So they transferred $15,000 into his account in the Netherlands. And then in a sting operation, another 10,000 in cash in Aruba. And when they caught him, he said that the body was buried in the foundations of a building, but that building wasn't even being built in 2005 when she went missing. He just picked the place on a map that was there then and went, oh, that's only new. I'll just say that. Like, he's not even fact checking his lies at this point. But he's just balls out.
Or is he? Or is he? Because he knew that didn't go with the story.
Yeah.
So he got no guilt and 25 grand.
I don't think he got
for a lie.
25 grand though. But like, weird.
I'd say he spent a bit of it.
Well, not long after the money changed hands.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm getting out of here. I haven't got a fucking red cent. Everybody knows my name. Mm. I can't get any more pussy at Carlos and Charlie's because they're all like, oh, the last time we met, the last time somebody went off to fuck you, they ended up like, buried in the sea or something like that. So on the 30th of May 2010, only mere weeks after getting this cash transfer into his Dutch bank, 21-year-old business student Flores Ramirez was reported missing in Peru. She was found dead 3 days later in a hotel room that was registered to Joran Vandersloot.
Yeah.
That is fucked. You didn't look at that. You didn't know that.
I did know that. 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, you were surprised to hear it.
I was.
It's like the twist ending,
because
right?
He just sounded like he just kept getting away with it. And it was none crazy.
None of those documentaries made in the last 12 months say that shit at all. None of them say that shit.
Yeah.
Why don't they?
I don't know.
That should be like, and the biggest fucking Shyamalan twist of all, whoops, he actually killed somebody.
Yeah.
In exactly the same circumstances. Picked up a bird, brought her to the hotel room, murderized. So he was quickly arrested in Chile and he was extradited to Peru to face charges. And he confessed outright to killing her.
They got the
they
fucking
got
confession.
Because they'll pull your fucking fingernails out with the pliers, man.
Yeah.
He confessed to killing her. He caught her looking through his laptop. What was on his laptop that he was wanting to hide?
Mm.
Right? She said to him that she had found something on the laptop. And he confessed and he said, okay, look. She said she had seen this thing. It was evidence that would link me to the death of Natalie Holloway. And he just went into a fit of rage and killed her stone dead. And then now they know where the body is, according to Peruvian investigators who were keeping that information under lock and key. And Vandersloot pleaded guilty to murder in 2012 and was sentenced to 28 years in prison.
But if they know that, why aren't they letting the poor
That's
parents?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Why not? Because there's a bigger hand in this whole thing.
Hmm.
There's something from the top down. What was the evidence they found on the laptop? What was that? What did she see that she had to have been killed for?
Yeah.
That Vandersloot had to go, I've got away with it. I have a ball of money. I'm in a country where, you know, the dollars that I have are worth loads. I could just live here just fucking around, having a drink, having a smoke, chilling, having a hotel room, fucking Peruvian young ones. Like, why would I fuck that up by murdering somebody? Oh, she found the evidence of the weird sex ring that...
Yeah,
you know,
it had to be...
Like
he'd already gotten away with murder. But maybe he was like, I can get away with it again. And now I'm in Peru and they'll be 20 times worse.
Well, the big investigation that we saw on the most recent documentary...
Yeah.
These guys went looking for what happened to the evidence... The camera, the video evidence of Natalie Holloway being with Joran Vandersloot. What happened... Between the hours of 2 and 4, these guys want to know that thing. And they looked up the previous movements of Vandersloot and the Calpo brothers. They looked up
DJ
Diablo. They looked up another guy called Paul B. right? And mm-hmm. all of these guys, Mr. Pink, this guy was called, Paul B.
Yeah.
And they looked up Van der Sloot's laptop only in the last couple of years and found all this kind of stuff. And this evidence came out then from, not from Peruvian authorities, but from other authorities, Freedom of Information Act stuff, that he was in contact with this guy called Mr. Pink, and he was on a website called Reality Kings, which is a porn website, and he was on there, and he had downloaded two films, they said, and he was chatting with someone using the chat in the website's like chat function or whatever. Like, what would a lad be doing at 3 o'clock in the morning after fingering a girl on the beach for ages but not having sex with her? What gives him the right to go home and download two pornos? Like, what was he thinking? What would he be even using them for? The answer is having a wank, Claire.
Mm.
Right? But these guys in this investigation have gone, oh, there's something more to that. There's something more to that. And maybe there is. And maybe that was the cover that he went on to look like he was downloading to, but he was really communicating with these guys. It came out later on from confessions that he had fucking filmed a 14-year-old girl.
I'd say he was filming a lot of people in those hotel rooms.
In that Mill
and
Hotel.
And if Reality Kings was a porn site that, like, say their USP is realistic sex scenes with young women who have no idea they're being filmed.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a market for that, and there's a market for everything, then I'm assuming he was getting a lot of, you
know. Maybe he was getting business from it.
Like, he was providing them with material.
Yeah. So these guys they found all these messages between the Calpo brothers and Van der Sloot, and they said that they were talking about fucking and taking videos of American girls and doing sex acts and making homemade porn.
Mm. But and who's to say he didn't video him killing Natalie Holloway?
And that was the thing she found on the laptop.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe they were into snuff movies. Yeah. Maybe it went a little bit far. I wouldn't say that Reality Kings, like, it doesn't seem like a website that's so brazen and open that they put out, like, videos of girls who could very well go in and go, I was hammered and that guy took a video of me and now I'm on a porn site. I didn't sign that and I didn't get paid that and take that shit down. I don't think they put themselves up for some legal troubles like that.
But also, they're not really contactable so much.
Well, in the documentary, we found out that they're not.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that they do have a business address. So I don't think that they would, like, straight up put randos who didn't give their permission to be on the website. But who's to say that Van der Sloot and some guys underneath it all are not sharing these things of, like, oh man, there's this one and she's fucking bananas and we box her around the place in a hotel room and, like, you know, throat fuck her or whatever you see in these videos.
Yeah.
And, you know,
or that he's befriended people, say, initially through some porn sites.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, go, oh man.
They groomed him to get girls to come into the thing. Yeah.
Or if you could get me, like, I'm looking for, I'll go directly to you and I'll pay this much money into your account. If you can get me a video of a woman being
killed,
really hurt.
Yeah. I mean, Claire, you're my girlfriend, love my life, but I have to tell you, I've seen some fucking weird shit on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, some weird fucking stuff, right? And these girls are doing that shit voluntarily.
Yeah.
For money. Mm. So who's to say that Van der Sloot can't get this girl and is like, come here, do you want to be famous? Like, they get you into a hotel room and there's some wild shit being done to women all over the world for little or no money, just to keep, you know. Maybe, I don't know, if a girl with a drug habit is going to go on holidays to Aruba, it's probably not the right demographic. You're talking about, like, you know, like street.
Yeah, or street he chicks, was secretly, like, filming them and they had no idea.
Yeah, but that wouldn't go up on a public website is what I'm saying. So there had to be some kind of underground porn thing going on.
But I mean, they said they never worked with him anyway.
No, but a man called Paul B, a.k.a. Mr. Pink, who was working with Reality Kings, had a message history with Van der Sloot.
Mm.
And, like, Paul B said he was never interviewed by the FBI, that he wanted to, but at the time when he was living in Aruba, he wanted to get into porn, and he said he never worked for Reality Kings, but that has been disproven in this documentary.
Right.
And when these guys went to go look for both Mr. Pink's previous business address and Reality King's business address, they weren't there anymore. So where are these guys gone? Like, real weird situation there. That's an extra, like, sprinkling on top of the whole story.
Yeah.
Which could mean that's why it's so difficult to find any information. Even though Jorn Van der Sloot is like, I did it. This is how I did it. Yeah. This is what I did it with. And everyone's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But okay. Like, the man went down. He's in jail now. Yeah. But he's in jail for killing a Peruvian girl. He's not in jail for killing Natalie Holloway.
And she still hasn't
been found. Like, what, you know, what's the what's the big mystery there? There must be something above that. And I know it's those conspiracy guys like, oh, there's an overarching cabal. But like, if you're into digital porn or snuff movies, like we've all seen 8mm with Nicolas Cage. If you're into that shit and they accidentally like did something to Natalie Holloway, or she died from drug over, like they were injecting her with heroin or whatever to make sure that she wouldn't escape, and they were fucking doing stuff to her on camera. Like, you'd know that they have enough money to cover that shit up. Yeah. And to put Vandersloot out as like, well, unlucky buddy, you were caught, like a big time drug dealer would let the little, you know, drug pusher on the corner go to jail.
Mm.
And Vandersloot like basically fessed up and everyone went, yeah, whatever. Because he had lied so many times. Like they knew it was the perfect cover. Like, give it to this little psychopath horn dog.
Plus they had no proof.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy, man.
I think what's really crazy is that they investigated him. He was arrested. And they never looked at his computer.
No.
That is nuts.
But they arrested him twice and let him go twice. They only really arrested him because he killed somebody in Peru after they had fucking given him 25 grand.
Yeah.
That's fucking bananas.
Yeah.
Like, he nearly got away. Very, very strange.
Very strange.
And one of the last witnesses that we mentioned, because there had been loads of different sightings and all around Aruba, like I said earlier on, the jaw that washed up on the beach. Another couple, Patty and John Muldowney, went to Aruba on a holiday, and John had this underwater camera and they took a picture of something and they thought that it could be the remains of Natalie Holloway. And that was in 2010, but they didn't go and look. It was, you know, like a hip bone or a bracelet or something under the water.
Mm.
It didn't turn out to be anything, but it was like 2010. Drag it all back up again. That, yeah. Same as Madeleine McCann. If anyone mentions anything about it, like, it's all in the front pages for ages because it sells news, you know. Mm. But this one from 2015, a witness called Jurien de Jong came forward in 2015 and said that Vandersloot had told him that he buried the body on a building site where now stands a hotel, right?
Mm.
And the prosecutor on the case, Eric Althoff, says that he doesn't believe him. Obviously, because he's after telling loads of porcupines.
Yeah.
But De Jong claims that he saw Vandersloot with his own eyes drag her by the feet after digging her up from the first burial. So they buried her,
yeah,
dug her up, and then tried to find a more permanent place for the body. He drug her by the feet into a crawl space in a building site as a hotel was being built. And it's the Marriott Hotel in Aruba. And the Google images show that there was construction at the time in 2005. The Marriott Hotel refused to cooperate with the investigation or whatever because they'd have to fucking dig up their hotel.
Mm.
Like, her bones could be under the foundations of the Marriott Hotel in Aruba.
Now, wasn't the Marriott Hotel the hotel where Tracy Allen, she was staying in the Marriott the time that she was attacked on the beach, which was 9 days before.
And that guy had jumped out of the car and wouldn't let her get back there. So it was close, that the fishermen's huts are close to the Marriott Hotel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Could it be? Could that be where it is? Like,
but what, like,
would it warrant being dug up? Like, it's like looking for the bones of Jimmy Hoffa or something, you know?
But also my point is that were they building when there were people staying there?
It could have been an extension.
It could have been, yeah.
I don't know the specifics of the building, but I know that the Marriott won't cooperate, and De Jong says that he's seen it with his own eyes.
Mm.
Like, but none of these leads are followed in this case.
Yeah,
like.
But yeah, and another friend of Vandersloot's had lied, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, I suppose they're kind of going like, okay, do we have to bear the cost of having the Marriott dig up their foundations to find that this is just another in a massive string of lies
that he comes out with once a year?
Yeah. Because he's not just looking for attention.
Yeah, it's totally fucked, man. Yeah. But it's obviously the best way to tell a lie is to tell a million lies.
Yeah.
And then you don't know which one is actually the truth, you know?
Yeah, and like sometimes it's, you know, a fisherman's hut. Sometimes it's the building, you know, like he did say that she was buried in a building foundation. Maybe he's just like, but not that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He told a half-truth and people went, oh, distraction.
Yeah.
Do you know, maybe the first time that she was killed, like immediately she was killed, they did bury her in the golf course.
Yeah.
And then they had to dig her up and go find a more permanent place for it to put her body so that she wouldn't be found later on.
Yeah.
Like,
and maybe when he said, you know, like say the Marriott is building like a basement room or whatever, or a bit of a car park.
Or an extension or something.
Yeah. But like, it's not obvious because they want to keep it hidden because they don't want the hotel to look like it's under construction from the guests.
Yeah.
So the police look at it and they go, no, there's no building happening at that time. Maybe they have different planning permission laws or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, the Marriott was standing since 2000, whatever, 1990, whatever.
So it doesn't show up on the
records. So he's actually said the truth.
Yeah.
But he told so many lies that he's actually gotten away with telling, with confessing.
Yeah, he seems a fucking slippy bastard. He is, man.
Slippy sladdy.
I'd love to hear him now talk about it. Like, get him right in on an interview and get him to, like, go, like, tell me exactly, like, minute for minute, like, maybe he's in jail like 6 years now.
Yeah.
Maybe he might come out and say, yeah, fuck it. You know, this
I'd
is what
say
happened.
He'll do a book. He's dying for a bit of attention, I'd
do you
say.
Think?
Yeah.
He's trying to grow a beard in so he looks good on camera.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's a very weird situation. I don't know what happened to the Calpo brothers. Can't find nothing about them. Very little can be found about this really concrete evidence online. It's a lot of, you know, true crime podcasts talking about the details we're talking about. Maybe not going into them as much speculation or as much kind of background, but it does seem very odd. Can't find nothing on Joran van der Sloot. Like, there's more stuff on Albert Fish, and that shit was 100 years ago, than there is on Joran van der Sloot online.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's so fucking weird.
Yeah, and it seems to me like
cover up.
You know, but more people would know stuff than
yeah.
More people would have seen things. More people. I know it was the middle of the night, but it was the middle of the night in Aruba where loads of people were out partying all night.
And loads of people have come forward and said, I saw this and I saw that. And it was all discounted. Like, it's, you know, it could very well be some young lad just literally got away with murder, but just got, you know, got caught for another one.
Do you know what I'd say?
Or
the
it could be an overarching porn empire is going, don't let it be known that I'm fucking Tijuana and, you know, Cancun and all of these places, there are all these holiday destinations for teenage girls where you can give someone $50 and then film them giving you some like sloppy tequila blowjob.
Yeah.
And then put it on the internet like girlfriend revenge or some bullshit, and there's nothing they can do about it because they consented on camera. Like, don't tell me that the millions of dollars, billions of dollars behind the porn industry is not able to prop up that one case where the time the three lads were going to town on some young one and filming it, that she fucking died and they went, oh, quick. And the lads this porn industry facilitated them to be like, there's some way worse shit going on where people don't die. Like, that's not morally bankrupt for them to do that. Or that the Marriott Hotel is just like, listen, I'll just give you money to make this go away because we have hotels over the world.
Yeah.
And if we have like the dead body, I'm sure there's loads of people dying in Marriott hotels. Mm. Like old people, you know, people drug overdoses.
Yeah.
Like it happens all the time probably, but it's not like a world famous murder case.
Marriott, any hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it happens all the time. Yeah. And Mandalay Bay, for example. Mm. No, I'm sorry. And it's just so massive. And yet there's nothing can be found. You can't put your finger on anything concrete in this whole massive, very famous case.
Yeah.
And when you type it into YouTube, you get about 25 2-minute videos, one super grainy 40-minute news report from about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And then like half a documentary from Journeyman TV, which is 40 minutes long, that doesn't even tell the basics of the case. And it doesn't even tell that Joran van der Sloot killed a woman in Peru. Yeah. None of them do. Like, that's fucked up. That's the crux of the case. Like, that he actually killed someone and he's actually in jail right now.
Mm. Yeah.
That's mad, right?
It is mad, yeah.
So let's get off the fence.
Yeah.
Finish this up. Mm. Claire, tell us, what do you think happened off the fence?
My off the fence is that I think she was an innocent young 18-year-old. Innocent in the sense of like she was just looking to party.
Yeah.
She probably had a bit too much to drink. As often happens, she might have gotten a bit stroppy with her friends and gone, well, I'm going off with these lads because they look like great crack. And she was having loads of great crack.
And they were like, don't go. And then she was like, I'll do what I want.
Yeah, until the laughter stopped. And, you know, she was never seen again. I think your man, like, definitely killed her, van der Sloot.
Yeah.
And I'd say he did have those two Julios as his little, like, assistants, because they were reaping a lot from being his mates.
Yeah.
The
backhanders and the
and I'd say they definitely, like, I don't think he did it all on his own. I think he had help definitely to dispose of the body twice. But I do have a problem with the fact that when there's a lack of evidence in a situation like this, it goes to victim blaming. And I think that's what the Aruban police did. Like, immediately.
And the two documentaries we watched did.
Yeah. But like, to the point where they're like, and she was probably on drugs. Yeah, I'd say she was on heroin. Like, this kind of ridiculous, like, and what colour skirt was she wearing? It was probably really short, was it? You know, this kind of, like, nobody deserves to go missing / be murdered. You know, no matter how hammered they are. And like, I'd say there's an awful lot of people all over the world going, God, that could have happened to me.
Yeah.
A handful of times, if not more so. in my lifetime. I just happened to not meet the psychopaths, you know. So she was in a vulnerable situation. For some reason, whatever happened that night, it went a bit pear-shaped. Whereas I'd say he was at that kind of stuff all the time. But the girls just woke up and they couldn't remember how they got where they were.
Yeah.
And then they just went, I have bad feelings when I think of Aruba.
Yeah. Bad juju.
Yeah. They're not going back for the honeymoon, like.
Yeah. It's who do you think about, like, about the Calpo brothers and then Van der Eames and all of these guys that were kind of... mates with Van der Sloot. There was a whole network of people. Like, do you think the whole thing is to do with anything to do with, like, porn? That whole porn storyline that this documentary was trying to lean us towards? Is DJ Diablo and the Calpo brothers and Van der Eames, like, are these guys all in it together? Why are they all telling lies? Why
I
are
could
they
see them all being in,
drawing, like, world media's attention and then telling lies?
DJ Diablo definitely gave me a feeling of, like, there's something.
He knows fucking something.
But also, he must have a bit of power. Because, like...
I don't know. He's working 7 nights a week, like.
Well, how come they just let him off? Like, he wasn't working that night and he said he was. And then he said he was out until 4:30 and the club was finished at 2:30.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe he has protection above him that's going.
That's what,
like,
I'm saying, yeah.
You so just say this and don't say anything else.
Yeah, I didn't trust him at all. And I think, yeah, probably a lot of them were kind of this, like, a group of untouchables, you know.
For what reason?
But I don't know. I wouldn't go pointing the porn stick.
No, I'm just saying that was one of the lines that was given by this documentary that we watched, because those guys went looking for reality kings who, like how can you fucking... The lad wanted to have a wank when he went home. That's why his browser said he was on that site. Yeah. Like, it happens.
Yeah. I don't know if they could find that, why they couldn't find any other stuff.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Very weird. My off the fence would be that I think Joran van der Sloot is definitely guilty. Something he did made her die. It wasn't just drink. You know, a bad turn.
Yeah.
You know, strangled. Maybe something happened. They were going too... Maybe they brought her back to the Mill Hotel and they were just going too hard. Like, we'll never know because they didn't do a DNA check in the Mill Hotel. They didn't interview her friends to find out why the key card was used a bunch of times. They didn't investigate the fucking area around the fishermen's huts. Or after the Tracy Allen attack, they never put a fucking guard out on the beach patrolling the area because it's like, here's a guy who's trying to get somebody around here. Maybe he might strike again.
Mm.
They never thought to do that. I was like, what the fuck, lads?
Or the CCTV footage.
Or CCTV footage from all the hotels, from all the road stops, all these stuff. Like, nothing. They did nothing and waited for way too long. They were never going to find her alive. I think she died that night. I think Van der Sloot and or the Calpo brothers had something to do. I think it may have happened in the Mill Hotel and when they buried her on the golf course. They left her for a day and then a day or two later, they got her and dragged her somewhere. Now, it could be in the building, in the foundations of a building. That's probably the only place to do it. The lad said that maybe DJ Diablo had brought her out in a boat and brought her out into the middle of the sea.
Yeah, didn't he DJ on a boat at that point?
Yeah, but also he had his own boat. And between the hours of 2 and 4, he had loads of time to drive like an hour out into the sea, drop her and let the currents take her all the way out to sea and she'd never be found. And then come back, like, who knows what he was doing between 2 and 4? I don't. He doesn't say.
Yeah.
Like, he's changed his statement a bunch of times, as did they all. I do think that the accomplices and the amount of people that are willing to lie to courts as well as world media is highly suspicious. And the fact that a potentially innocent man would confess and draw so much attention to himself. Like, if you did that in America, if you came out in America and said in an American court, or even on American TV, like, if you were an American, yeah, I did that shit, you'd be arrested straight away. If you said it to a cop, yeah, I did that shit, you'd be arrested and convicted straight away. On your own testimony. Like, that's it. That's how the law works. All I need to do is for you to say it. Like, you stand up in court. How do you plead? Guilty. All right, there you go, jail. See it. Even if you're not guilty, you say it once as a joke. Like, I was only joking, Your Honor. Like, you're fucking done. And he managed to get caught and released, arrested and released twice. Then the third time, he was caught and he fucking confessed on live TV. Then they gave him $25,000. Then he went to Colombia. And then he killed somebody. Like, that's not the actions of a fucking normal person.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how did they let that happen? So Joran van der Sloot, if you are listening, I suppose you're an egomaniac and you want to hear all the podcasts about yourself. So send us an email to info@thoseconspiracyguys.com. And, you know, if you want to confess, let us know. Just send us an email. Like, I did it. That's enough. You just put a little picture with your thumbs up. Anything you want. If you're able to get, if you're... if you're able to get communications out of a Peruvian jail or whatever. So yeah, that's it for this time on Those Conspiracy Guys. Natalie Holloway, Claire, it's a strange one, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, a bit messy. Very spurious.
Yeah.
No facts. It's hard to piece it all together, I imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not on its own either. Like, there's several missing women cases in Ireland.
Yeah, very, very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it for this time on Those Conspiracy Guys. This has been the Natalie Holloway story, true crime episode. If anything we said in the episode, you know, tickles your inquisitive bones and you want to get in contact with us, same email for Yoren as there is for you, info@thoseconspiracyguys.com. We're on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, and we have our own website, thoseconspiracyguys.com. Check us out on YouTube or on Twitch for any of the live shows or even some of the little vlogs and documentaries and stuff like that. And if you like the show and you want to keep it going and you want to give us a hand, patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys is the place to be. You can get on there. The links will all be in the description below. And you can drop a couple of dollars in there and get like behind the scenes footage, extra stuff that nobody else gets to see. You get like secret vlogs that we make when we're making the shows. And there's some other stuff in there as well. There's a secret RSS feed that's only available to Patreon people. You get your own individual one and you can put that into your podcast app. And then you get a whole second show of behind the scenes stuff. Audio clips like an extra Those Conspiracy Guys podcast straight into your podcast app, so you can check that out there. And if you want to get any TCG merch, cups, t-shirts, hoodies, bags, notebooks, phone cases, and you want tpublic.com/store/thoseconspiracyguys will get you there. And we also have a sister podcast where we talk about movies, TV shows and computer games called White Press Play, and you can check that out. It's great crack, and there's no dead bodies and there's no kiddies getting fiddled and there's no, it's all just like movies. Yeah, it's all light and cheery. So you can check that out, White Press Play, a big orange box. You can find it in any of the places that you find podcasts. And I'd like to thank Claire for sticking with us.
Thank you.
This is yet again another dark, weird, awful thing that yeah. Can you imagine your life any other way now?
I'm holding out for the lighthearted one.
I don't think we get a light. There's no lighthearted conspiracies. We might try something.
There should be. Our Care Bears, you know, where did they come from?
Where do Care Bears get their power?
Yeah.
It's the Zionists. Yeah. That's where.
Okay. You had to ruin Care Bears for me. Thanks.
Sorry. I'm sure we'll have some good times when we go to America.
I'm sure we'll have some great times.
I'm sure we will. Yeah. We do have a GoFundMe at the moment now for the American trip. The link is below, but it's gofundme.com/TCGTV. And what's going to happen is next September, fingers crossed, hopefully, we'll be able to go to America, start off in California, and do a kind of a round trip of all of the conspiracy locations. We'll do interviews with experts. We'll meet loads of other YouTubers and podcasters. And we'll meet all the fans, all the people from Patreon and beyond. We'll be able to get together, do a couple of live shows, do some meet and greets. And then I want to do different vlog situations, go to all the different cons, go to like the Mothman Festival and hit Dallas in November to see all the JFK stuff. And be able to go up the mountains and hunt Bigfoot or, you know, visit Area 51. All of these kind of conspiracy type things. I also want to chase down the missing 411 people. And I want to have a look at some of the Franklin Credit Union scandal kids and start looking around Baltimore and see if we can find anybody who knows anything about anything, if you know what I'm saying. It's going to be 10 documentaries, hopefully more, if I'm able to, if I have the time to make it. And they're going to be released in some kind of a way. I mean, some streaming media, maybe like Netflix or Hulu or whoever will buy them. If you're listening to Netflix, I'll be selling these maybe ending 2019, something like that. But I need you to be able to help us fund this trip. So this is a big swing for Those Conspiracy Guys, and it's maybe the last chance for my age that I'll be able to take this much time out of life to be able to go and do something like this in this big, huge chunk of time. And Claire is gonna join me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really happy about it.
It's very exciting.
Planning it for like 6 or 8 months, publicly for about 2 months. And the GoFundMe is live now. So even if you dropped a fiver, if you've listened to this show, there's over 400 hours of podcasts. If you listen to even half of that, it should be at least worth a fiver. And I know I've been shilling Patreon, and I know I've been doing ads, and I know I've been doing all this stuff. I'm scraping. This stuff is just barely, you know, keeping us above water. This is my full-time job. This is all I do. There's nothing paying the rent. I spent the first 2.5 years of this thing doing two jobs, working in a phone shop and then doing like an Irish music tour for American tourists. And I did that for 2 years like two jobs from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then still got time to do the podcast. Like, this shit is blood, sweat and tears. It's my lifeline. It's my lifeblood. I love it and I want to take it to the next level. If you're able to donate at GoFundMe .com/TCGTV, you would be really helping us out. The target is $75,000, and that's going to cover, you know, buying a van to drive around in, the gas, food, some accommodations, and, you know, extra sundries like tickets into places and paying for the incidentals of a Pan-American trip. So I want to be able to make somewhat of a decent vlog. I see guys doing it, like Fun for Louie and stuff like that, and he's getting sponsored at the Yin Yang. I'm also looking into sponsorship and all that kind of stuff, but I want to be able to do it for the people, and I don't want anyone leaning over me and telling me what I can and cannot say. And in the age of citizen journalism and independent media creation, this kind of thing can be done. There's hundreds of thousands of you out there listening to these episodes, and I know that you have a pocket that has money in it. So if you wanted to give up one coffee to help a brother out around Christmas time, go to gofundme.com/TCGTV, and you know, it's not like you're giving it to me to just spend on Skittles and you know, soda.
Yeah, we won't
soda
be
pops.
Buying any soda pops.
No soda pops. Like, this is going to be paying for flights, paying for legal fees, accountants, fuel, you know, camera equipment, storage media, the subscriptions for all of the different apps and stuff that we're going to be using, paying for computers to edit the stuff on. Like, this is a big swing. This is a big swing. And it could definitely be done. The target is 75,000. If I get over that, happy out. We need to get to 30,000 by the 28th of February. That's the phase one goal. So please dig deep, see what you can do. Click the link below in the description and donate. Like, a fiver is a coffee, right? What's a fiver? What's a large coffee in Starbucks?
No, it's decent coffee is about €4.
About €4. Like, it's one coffee for all these hours of podcasting. So, like, for the 4 years that we've been doing this, I think this is the next step for those conspiracy guys. So please think about it. Give generously if you can. And, you know, I won't be going on like this every episode. This is just the first one to say, go and have a look. So thanks very much for all your support. Thanks for listening. And also thanks to Claire for joining us for this one.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for being here. It was
my pleasure.
It was good of you to come in from
the
sitting
room. Happy
to help. So that's it for those conspiracy guys this time. I'm Gordo.
I'm Claire.
And thanks for listening. Goodbye.